Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this is part of an ongoing series as an investigation into the transformation of the consciousness that we are inhabiting and creating here on this planet, and what is coming, our revolution and upliftment of the quality of life, the quality of being human. And tonight's guest is someone who's in the world of science, but also very connected to the spiritual unfoldment. His name is Mark Newkirk, and he has created a device called the Light Field, and we'll be talking about that. So, Mark, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, what I'm so excited about what you do is you're able to combine the worlds of physics, because you're trained as a physicist, with metaphysics. And then also you're presenting about a new way of understanding reality, which is in terms of fields. But let's start with, how were you able, if you want to give us a little bit of a story, being trained as a physicist, able to then integrate something non-physical, like the metaphysical world? Does that make sense, that question?
Actually, I'm originally trained as a materials engineer, but my career has brought me across many, many scientific disciplines because of the fact that materials are the most fundamental building block in almost everybody's technologies. But one of the places where there's nexus here between physics and materials is over the question of the most fundamental nature of materials and how materials and energy, matter and energy, relate to each other. There's a lot of evidence now that consciousness actually has a role in what we experience in the way of matter and energy. So all of it integrates into a picture. We're living in probably the most amazing time in history, where our understandings in physics and metaphysics are merging, and our understanding about the nature of matter is also becoming quite highly evolved, and the result of that is quite surprising and indeed leads you to metaphysics.
Well, what was the big breakthrough for you? Because you did work pretty much as a hardcore scientist, and you know, suddenly you found yourself beyond that paradigm. What was the key or the moment?
I've been blessed with a career in which I've spent virtually the entirety of my career developing new technologies and commercializing them. And I've been a very prolific inventor. My father was, my son is. And we all knew that the way that we were inventing was not using rational thought processes. We all knew that the way that we were inventing was essentially receiving information and then using our scientific backgrounds to interpret the information that we were receiving, which then became the invention. And in fact, I would submit to you that all inspiration, whether it be a composer composing a piece of music or artist doing a painting or an inventor, any of them, are all basically receiving information and using their disciplines to be able to interpret the information and bring them into the world. And so I've always had a certain aspect of what I did connected with an awareness of consciousness. There was an event which did, in fact, shift my career path from developing more or less conventional technologies that, albeit were quite powerful ones. They were conventional in the sense of new materials and processes, which became the basis of many, many products across many industries. But shortly before the turn of the millennium, I became aware of a technology that had been developed out at SRI International, a spinoff of Stanford University, called remote viewing. And I became aware that now there were a set of technologies which one could use to actually demonstrate that all of us have within us a higher consciousness that's omniscient. and that became totally fascinating to me. And I shifted gears from developing technologies which develop things to beginning to understand the physics of consciousness and how it interacted with everything else, and then subsequently went full circle back to developing technologies that in fact embodied that understanding.
Well, let's talk about the physics of consciousness. That's something I've done a lot on this program. And like you say, it's obvious to artists and songwriters that there's something that comes to them that's outside of them, and that's inspiration. It's the divine talking to them. But and then how does that fit into the whole physics of consciousness? Tell me what you discovered.
Well, others have discovered in this time a phenomenon of the realization that thoughts create a field. According to classical physics, there are five fields in classical physics. There are electric fields, magnetic fields, gravitational fields, and so-called strong and weak nuclear attraction fields. According to classical physics, those are all of the fields that, in fact, create influence at a distance. And the influence of all of those fields decreases dramatically with distance from the source. But it has been discovered now, more recently, that, in fact, thoughts create a field. And they create a field which has different properties than the other five fields, and that there are, in fact, six fundamental fields in physics. The Russians were actually the first to really understand the nature of those fields from a scientific point of view and their properties. And they discovered that in fact, thoughts do create a field, and that every living being creates such a field around itself. In fact, the description since ancient times of an aura that surrounds living beings, people, plants, anything living, is in fact, as it turns out, a awareness of the existence of that field.
So thoughts create a field, yet we're also saying that thoughts, in a way, come to us. I mean, there's the Buddhist term, thoughts without a thinker. It's, I think there's actually subtleties of thought. There's thoughts we receive, and there's thoughts we send. There's thought, the whole field of what is a thought is very subtle, in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
Certainly. Certainly one of the things that I think many people are starting to realize is that there are numerous levels of consciousness. And at the lowest, at what I would regard as the lowest level of consciousness, which is rational or waking consciousness, we have a certain level of perception. We all know that we have another level of consciousness operating, which people refer to as the subconscious, which is keeping our hearts beating and choosing what muscles we use to operate and things like that that we're not consciously aware of. And the subconscious, of course, has many other roles as well. People have access to the subconscious via hypnosis and things like that. And it's known that there is that level of consciousness additionally. What many people realize, but most have difficulty accessing, is that there is a higher level of consciousness, which some call the superconscious, which in fact is what meditators are trying to connect with by quieting down all the racket in their lower levels of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that level of consciousness, the level of the superconscious, is in fact omniscient. At lower levels of consciousness, we think we're all separate and alone. At the highest level of consciousness, we realize that we're all an aspect of a single thing happening in a single consciousness. The reason our highest level of consciousness is omniscient is because at that level, there is only one consciousness. So when we're receiving information into our lowest level of consciousness, it can indeed be coming simply from our own highest level of consciousness, which is omniscient.
Mm. Just another side question, because I know you've thought about this. Is the universe evolving? Is that one mind in a flux, in a movement, or is it stationary in a sense where it's omniscient in in knowing all time and space. So do you know what I'm asking? Is there a movement within the grand scope of creation, understanding itself and progressing as all knowledge known at once, or maybe it's both?
I think, in fact, all knowledge is known at once, but I think the perception of different levels of consciousness is that the universe is evolving in the sense that a given level of consciousness can be created, that is, new consciousnesses, new awarenesses, if you will, can be created continually, and those awarenesses can increasingly rise into higher and higher awareness. So there's, I guess the answer in a way is both, that the universe is forever becoming, if you will, and yet at the most fundamental level, it's already become everything that's conceivable.
Well, that, yeah, I kind of suspect that, but I think on the level that most we're functioning on this level, that's not yet super consciousness. It seems like a duality, perhaps. But getting back to the idea of fields and thoughts creating a field. Within that, I think you made some important discoveries. Can you tell us about that?
Well, one of the discoveries that we made is that you can create fields, thought fields, or what I prefer to refer to as information fields. That is, these are non-physical fields that are comprised literally of ideas or thoughts or information. You can create them synthetically. Actually, the Russians started to do that as they began to understand the existence of the sixth class of physics. They created some technologies where you could do that. We noticed that, in fact, you can create such fields with a property of coherence. And when those fields are created with a property of coherence, you can put a living being, that such as a human being, in that field, and they will spontaneously begin to reconnect levels of consciousness which, for most adults, for example, adult humans, have become disconnected through the process of living. So it facilitates or catalyzes, in a way, maybe catalysis is a poor word there, but facilitates a reconnection of levels of consciousness so that you start to be aware at each level of consciousness of what you know at the highest level.
Right. I mean, the coherent field, I mean, nature could be considered a field that's coherent. Just putting, and I guess it does have that effect. That does relax the mind. But you, like you say, you're synthetically creating a field. Will it create, I mean, I would suppose it creates more coherence than just walking in the woods in nature. There's something that seems like you've done that actualizes a greater coherency, would you say?
I believe that's true. Nature itself tends to be highly coherent, but when you have the interaction of different life forms on the planet, and when they start to be in disharmony with respect to each other, then they start to create incoherence in what's being experienced in nature. It is possible to create synthetic information fields which have a high degree of coherence and are stronger than the ones normally encountered in nature. And when you do that and you put a person in such a field, regardless of whether they're awake or asleep or whatever they're doing, they will, and regardless of intention as well, they will begin to start to reconnect levels of consciousness and become more aware at their lower levels by virtue of that connection.
Right, and you've done an incredible thing. You've created a device that does create this coherency, and when I've used it, I feel like I could think clearer. I was more focused on what I needed to do, wanted to do, what I wanted to create, how I wanted to go out in the world and present myself. It just aligned it got me in touch with my more authentic feelings. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I think people, one of the most universal perceptions which people have emerging from that field is a greater sense of mental clarity and a greater sense of connectedness and less concern about the things that normally would distract them, annoy them, etc. And they tend to find that relationships improve. They tend to find that their mental efficiency is higher. Oftentimes they will find that skills which they have start to expand, musical skills or other skills. And oftentimes they will find that they have skills, that they start to manifest skills that they never knew that they had or never learned.
Wow, that's great. I know you only have one. It's up, you know, up in the New England area. And you're going to build more. But can you, you don't have to tell us exactly how you created this, but I know some of it involves sacred geometry. So can you talk a little bit about how, in a sense, these coherent fields are created?
Yeah, basically, geometry is fundamental, as it turns out, to everything. There have been some discoveries in our time, which you may be well aware of, in which, for example, Benoit Mandelbrot from Yale is credited with being sort of the father of fractal geometry. Actually, many people have made contributions to that field, but I think he probably has been central in developing an awareness of the fact that everything in nature, in fact, has a property of geometry associated with it. And everything from an atom to a tree to a mountain, a craggy mountain that looks like they're, some of those things look like they're random, actually they can be reduced to mathematical formulae that are based upon fractal geometry in which you can define the entire thing on the basis of a single fractal being repeated if you in fact describe the function properly mathematically. And so one of the things that's being discovered is that everything in the universe that's material has order. And, you know, we've, of course, been taught historically by mainstream science that the world is kind of a big accident that's just kind of bumping around and evolving randomly. But actually, the more that we know in science, the more it becomes apparent that nothing's random and everything is ordered and very highly ordered, and that the appearance of chaos is nothing more than a failure to perceive what's going on in the system at a higher level of order.
I see. So, I mean, yeah, I was always fascinated by the fact that each type of tree had its own unique signature of a leaf. Each leaf was particular to a tree. There were no two trees, different species of trees that had the same type of leaf. So as if the quality or the fractal of that tree is represented in the leaf in its own unique way.
That's true, and the way that everything branches in the tree will be found to have a relationship to the phi ratio, which is fundamental throughout all nature. The phi ratio, as it turns out, even relates to time itself. Since space and time are integrally related, it would be impossible that matter would be fractal and time wouldn't be fractal. And actually, Greg Braden pointed that out in his book a year ago, Fractal Time, in which he discovered that there were patterns in time that all obeyed the phi ratio. Now,
relative to your earlier question,
how do we create these coherent fields? There are certain classes of geometry which would be regarded since ancient times as sacred geometries, which, when you construct those geometries, create a coherent field. And it doesn't matter what you construct them out of, just the very business of creating that geometry, when it's created, creates a coherent field. And we utilize geometries in the unit that are so-called sacred geometries in order to create a coherent field. We also use information that's being derived from music and light. And in fact, it turns out that light and music have geometries associated with them too. As a matter of fact, it was very interesting recently. There was a young woman in the light field unit that we have here, which is the name of the unit that creates this coherent field that we produce. and she is still possessed of an ability to see auras. Actually, usually little children coming into the world can see them, but as they start to disconnect levels of consciousness, they lose that ability for most of us. But anyway, she was still a young woman, but she had still retained her capacity to see these fields. And she described the field as these beautiful colors of shimmering light that looked like they were reflecting off of water or something like that and flowing, and embedded within them were all kinds of geometries that she could see flowing, which was really interesting. There's a fundamental relationship between music and geometry, and in fact, when you use information that has been derived from music, which in fact we do in also creating this field to augment the field created by physical geometry, it in fact embeds geometric patterns in the field itself. And it's a little hard to wrap your mind around, because this field is just ideas. It's just information. It doesn't have any matter or any energy content to it.
But it's more than information, because it's obvious that the ancients knew these secrets. I mean, building the Great Pyramid with an angle of 51 degrees created a some kind of field that preserved things, that enhanced things. I mean, there was something that they knew, and I guess a lot of the ancients knew, that understood this, what you're saying.
Absolutely. That the Great Pyramid and pyramids in general are constructed with an ancient knowledge that knew about the fact that when you created those geometries, that they created coherent fields. Within the Great Pyramid, there's a coherent field that runs left-handed down through the center of the Great Pyramid, coming from its apex down through it, and coming out the tip of the Great Pyramid is a right-handed field. A left-handed field actually will have an effect, such as you describe, of preventing things like cellular division and all of that kind of thing. So, therefore, if you have, I think that the way this was actually originally discovered in the Great Pyramid, they had a trash can in there, and somebody noticed a cat, a dead cat that somebody had thrown in the trash can, and it had mummified rather than rotting. And, in fact, you can preserve food and things like that by maintaining them in a left-handed information field.
What, now, describe the difference between left-handed and right-handed. I didn't quite get.
It's kind of a difficult concept, because this is not something that's physical, but it has a certain handedness, right-handedness, and left-handedness. And the way that you can, in fact, appreciate that property is by virtue of its effect on matter. That is, when you get down to the smallest, what are viewed to be in physics, the smallest elements of matter, what are referred to somewhat mistakenly, I might add, but what are referred to as subatomic particles, those particles are all viewed to have a property called spin. And, for example, an electron is either spin up or spin down, is the concept. It has either of two spins that it can have, and a photon, a so-called particle of light, has a spin property of being a spin forward or spin backward. And there are more subtle aspects to spin in matter as well. Anyway, when you project an information field on matter, you can change the spin characteristic of the subatomic particles, which are one of the most basic properties of those particles. And you can literally cause fundamental changes in those particles by virtue of these information fields, which are non-physical fields and have no energy content. They're just thoughts, essentially, but those thoughts, the proper thoughts, right-handed ones or left-handed ones, so to speak, can actually change the spin property of subatomic particles and change the properties of matter. As an example, if you have a bosonic gas, a boson is a so-called subatomic particle. If you have a gas that is comprising bosons, If you hit it with the right information field so that you change its spin property, it becomes a fermionic gas with different thermal conductivity, different viscosity. It's a different material. It's fundamentally different now. You just changed its entire identity from a boson to a fermion and the physical properties from one material to another just by virtue of thoughts hitting it or ideas in the form of an information field.
But what kind of thoughts would hit that to change that? What kind of a field
would
do that?
Well, right-handed or left-handed information fields would have that property. And as I say, one way of generating right or left-handed information fields would be the example of the Great Pyramid, which when you produce that geometry physically, it will automatically and inherently have a left-handed information field running down within it and a right-handed information field coming out of the tip of it.
Wow. So left-handed fields preserve things and right-handed
promote life.
Modifies? Is that what you
said? Right-handed ones promote life, promote cell division, promote the generation of living things. Left-handed information fields tend to prevent that.
Prevent life, like decrease flow, right?
Basically, they keep it from evolving. I keep it from developing, if you will.
Which can also be useful at some points as well.
Preserving food or, you know, something like that.
Oh, I see. So it preserves food. If it was producing life flow, it would spoil and mold and all that.
Yeah, because something's growing in it. And, of course, the nature of the field beyond simply right-handed or left-handed has an enormous effect also on the way in which it will develop. For example, there was a series of experiments done by Professor Masaru Emoto in Japan, which you may be familiar with, in which he took some cooked rice and he put it in a couple of bottles, and he had a grade school class walk by the two bottles every day and to one of them say, "I hate you," and the other one say, "I love you," or the equivalent. It was very positive thoughts or very negative thoughts. I don't remember exactly which thoughts, but that was the gist of it. And over a period of weeks, they noticed that the bottle containing the cooked rice, which came from the same source, into sterile bottles, the bottle containing the rice that they'd given this negative pronouncement to in terms of thoughts every day from the class had turned black and was smelly and rotten and, you know, just abhorrent. But the other one, in fact, it was developing, it was fermenting, but it's fermented with a beautiful smell and had a light yellow color and clearly wasn't rotting, it was fermenting. Presumably into some kind of rice wine or something like that. I'm not sure what the fermentation product was. But they were, via the quality of the information field, which probably wasn't a matter of left-handedness or right-handedness. It was probably a right-handed field in both cases. But with the nature of the thoughts on a more detailed level than just right-handed or left-handed, they were influencing how those things evolved, whether they were growing something that was really nasty or growing something that was pleasant.
Yeah, no, actually, I was aware of that experiment, and I told my nephew in the seventh grade I'd love for him and his class to duplicate that by taking rice, but he didn't seem interested in that. But getting back to, like, how is it, it's the angles in these forms that create the field effect, right? It's because of the angle of the Great Pyramid. Is that, and the structure, I mean, how do you see that unfolding?
Well, there are certain so-called sacred geometries that are fundamental to dimensions, different dimensions of existence, actually. And what the Great Pyramid is actually half of one of those sacred geometries. It's half of, if you imagine the Great Pyramid having a mirror image of itself underground, what it would be is an octahedron. And an octahedron is one of the platonic solids. And a platonic solid, there are only five platonic solids, and all five platonic solids have a characteristic. They are the only geometries that have symmetry, which if you connected all the points of the geometries would lie within each of those geometries on the surface of a single sphere. And an octahedron is an example of that. A cube is an example of that. A star tetrahedron is an example of that. A dodecahedron and an icosahedron are examples of that.
Right. Those are the platonic solids. So there must be a unique field, then, that is generated from these platonic solids.
That's right. They all generate coherent information fields.
Coherent information fields.
Any physical object will generate an associated or will have an associated information field with it. What's really happening is the nature of everything physical is that there is actually a light field, a field of light that pervades all of the universe. And that field of light is the source from which all of what we would refer to as energy or matter or physical reality, in fact, manifests. Everything manifests from that light field. What causes that manifestation to occur is the interaction of information fields, of an information field with the light field. And it basically creates a change to where the light field is no longer has symmetry or essentially has texture. And when it has texture, we perceive that texture to be energy or matter. And that's what we would refer to as physical reality. On the other hand, if you take a structure and you create its existence, it is interfering with the symmetry of this light field in such a way that it is creating a coherent information field. So information fields and the manifestation of energy and matter and light all have interaction relationships.
That's interesting. So in your device, you've used, I guess, sacred geometries in order to create the coherent field, but of course it was probably more than that. You don't have to tell us specifically what you did, but is it a combination of things? And
it's actually all based entirely on geometry, but there are ways of applying geometry. For example, light has associated geometries with its different color contents and frequencies. Music has associated geometries in all music. If you were to take musical chords and plot them in three-dimensional space, you would find that they all define geometries. The geometry is fundamental to everything.
Right, but if you're taking all these things, you're taking geometries from music, geometries from light, geometries from form, I guess your job, and just guessing this, is to kind of see where they're coherent together. It's not
Yeah, that's right. You have to integrate them in a fashion that creates coherence. We're actually not our purpose isn't actually to teach people how to build light field units so much as it is to facilitate people reconnecting with their highest level of consciousness. One of the reasons for saying that is all technologies are capable of being misused. The whole business of information fields is fundamental to everything that is. And that's probably the most powerful and the most productive area of science there is. We've applied it in a certain way that creates something that is completely harmless and it re-empowers humanity. But our purpose actually isn't to train people in technology so much as it is to create technologies that create re-empowerment.
Right, but it seems like you're constantly upgrading it, which is great. And do you ever feel like at one point you got it? I mean, or is it an ongoing process for you?
I think it's not really an ongoing process. One of the things which has been very unique about this experience for me in creating the light field and being involved with creating a predecessor technology before it, which operated at a lower level, is that in both of those cases, there wasn't any development process. That is, when we built them and turned them on, they did what they were supposed to do. That doesn't mean that there aren't higher versions of them that are possible. And in fact, over time, we created higher versions. In the light field, we haven't yet created a higher version, but we're in the process of doing that by making a change to an aspect of the system. But it's never been a matter of let's try this and try that and see what works. It's we created it with a purpose of it operating at a specific level at a specific point in time, and now we're receiving the information to now move it to another level. And we'll do that at least one more time after this current one, which we're working on. And what's being done there isn't really a development process at all. It's bringing something into the world that is attempting to match the rising human consciousness in the world in a way that it's that you bring in what the world's ready for at the time that it's capable of it. And consciousness is actually rising in the world very, very fast right now. And so there are changes that are occurring in terms of technologies that are being created and released into the world. And those are actually being received in a manner that is being coordinated with the development of human consciousness and the need to develop human consciousness to a higher level.
Well, no, I think it's fascinating, and it's great to meet you on the forefront of science and consciousness, because they do seem to be merging. But how does these new ideas of the field feed back into mainstream science to people who aren't yet aware of what consciousness is, but just as far as general applications, you know, or do they have to change their thinking completely in order to be open to these field dynamics?
It really is based in an entirely different paradigm than the classical view of how things work. You're almost going back to square one. It isn't that mainstream science has been wrong about a lot of its pronouncements. You know, a great deal of science is in fact valid, but the mistake that's often been made is taking something that was true in a context and somehow extrapolating it as though it's universally true, and that the explanation for that truth is a certain model. And in fact, we've gotten it wrong at the most fundamental levels, such as, for example, the whole idea of light. What I would tell you is that there's a light field that's pervasive throughout the universe, which is not being detected precisely because it's pervasive and it has a property of symmetry. And all detectors detect by virtue of comparing what's within the detector from what's outside the detector. Without that, the detector is blind. And because that light field is pervasive, it's not detected. So what we've defined as light in classical science actually isn't light. It's a variation in the light field is what we see as light. And when we talk about the speed of light, actually there is no speed of light. There's a speed of a wave propagation through a light field where the light field just is and doesn't go anywhere. It's there like the ocean. And the light that we see and we define as light classically in physics is actually the wave that's moving through the light field and producing texture, if you will, in that field that's moving across the field just like a wave moving across the ocean. And so, you know, we've got some really basic misunderstandings, I would say, of the nature of things as fundamental as light. And since everything that manifests in the universe manifests from that, you know, it's hard to come from the classical scientific side and start working in this area without fundamentally revising your whole paradigm.
But these are your theories about the I mean, you know, maybe you have proof for them, but you know, this sort of is about sort of similar to the idea of ether, in a sense, where ether would be pervasive throughout the whole universe. And then Einstein comes along and says it's a time-space matrix. I mean, this is a fundamental new way of looking at physics. But is it just yours, or is there other people collaborating with this?
Well, I would say that there are numerous people throughout history who have glimpsed aspects of what I'm talking about and saw the model to be closer to what I'm talking about than the mainstream model that's been adopted and taught throughout the world. Nikola Tesla is probably one of the most famous who, in fact, believed that there was this concept of ether out there. You're right. I can't prove to you what it is I'm describing as a model, but what I would also tell you is where I got that model wasn't the result of a rational thought process any more than the design and building of the light field unit was a result of a rational thought process. Basically, the way the light field technology was created was by connecting lower levels of consciousness with our highest level of consciousness and literally downloading and receiving that technology, which is why there was no development process to it. There wasn't such a thing as let's try this, let's try that, oh, that didn't work, now let's try this. There was an intensive effort to build a unit that had hundreds and hundreds of engineering issues, which I have never seen anybody provide any teaching on or resolution to, all of which were gotten right so that when you flip the switch, the unit did exactly what it was doing, what it was supposed to do, and what we knew it would do in advance. And the reason for that was we were just downloading technology from the level of the superconscious. The superconscious is omniscient, and when you use that method to develop something, there's no development process. Actually, Einstein was well known for his thought experiments. You know, basically receiving information and rolling it over in his mind and receiving more and refining his models. Nikola Tesla was well known for developing things entirely in his mind until he was totally satisfied with them. And when he built them, there was no development process. He built them and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. So, you know, I won't tell you that the theory that I've described to you is either provable or necessarily correct, but I believe it to be correct. I'm willing to share that with anybody that wants to understand that, but my role isn't to prove it to anybody. Everybody's welcome to get their own model and prove it to themselves.
Well, no, I'm interested in it because obviously you have this concept that you then built technologies around that then seem to do what you thought it would do. So in a way,
they not only do what we thought they would do, they do things that heretofore have been unseen, at least in our modern time.
Such as
creating a coherent information field at the level that we are. And having people reconnect with their highest level of consciousness at a level of efficiency that we're seeing in this unit.
So let's go back to the idea that there's this field that emanates through creation. Would you say that's consciousness itself, or is that more of a impersonal force, or is it God? Is it whatever?
The light field, or are you talking about something else?
No, I'm talking about the concept of the light, of that big field, that big light field.
What the light field is from which all that's physical manifests is essentially a sea of all possibilities existing at once. And information fields basically interact with that field to manifest a specific one of those infinite number of possibilities.
So would you say it's like a blank piece of paper that can hold anything it wants? I mean, you know, you have a piece of paper, it presents any possibility, it presents all possibilities, but there's no information on it as yet. As you start to write, you create a structure within the field of possibilities.
That would be one way to describe it. Another way to describe it would be an infinite file of all possibilities, and what you're using as an information field is the key to access one of those files and pull it out and look at it and operate with it.
So you're in your unit, you're working with the greater field. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the greater field is pervasive. What we're working with is a field of information that is coherent, that when people are in that coherent information field, they reconnect levels of their own awareness back together. And that tends to be empowering. The information field that we produce in the light field is not tailored to the individual. It's one size fits all. It's a phenomenon of you put a person in a highly coherent information field, they will start to reconnect with their highest level of consciousness.
I mean, what comes to me sort of is the old Kabbalistic magic, perhaps, where people use this information. I'm not saying anyone we know, but that people have used it to create what they wanted through the manipulation of form and structure, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, there is certainly, from our point of view, there is a considerable amount of what has been known in the ancient Kabbalistic traditions that turns out to be science that underlies metaphysics.
Right. I mean, another question about that is, if you create this coherent field within touch with all the possibilities of reality, is it then possible to time travel, to shift our consciousness in time?
Yes, it is. And actually, virtually anything you can conceive of is possible at some level and in some way. And that's not to say that there isn't structure and design in the universe. There are certain rules, so to speak, that are designed to maintain order within a given theater, if you will, consciousness is operating. There are, for example, dimensions of existence that are essentially, from a conceptual point of view, co-located, that are organized as essentially octaves, like the octaves in music. And what separates one dimension of existence and experience from another is essentially frequency. And if you get your frequency up high enough, you can suddenly perceive a different reality around you that's operating at a higher frequency and operate in it.
Oh, I see. So in a way, it seems like many people are predicting this upgrade in frequency that is happening to the Earth right now. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would agree with that. The phenomenon that is creating change in the world right now at such a rapid pace is essentially moving from one information field band, that is the Earth and solar system, our Earth and solar system, are essentially moving from one information field band at one vibrational level into one of a higher vibrational level, and that produces an enormous amount of change. Actually, the classical ideas of how things evolve, Darwinian evolution, I would submit to you, is not only false, there's almost vanishingly small evidence as we have moved from the time that it was first conceived by Darwin. And even Darwin himself, toward the end of his life, was having second thoughts about whether, in fact, the theory of just random evolution of the fittest actually was the right theory at all. Actually, the archaeological evidence shows long periods of stability of species punctuated by short periods in which large numbers of species go out and large numbers come in. And what causes that change is actually the planet moving from one information field band to another. It was quite interesting the other day when you and I were together when you were showing me crop circles.
Yeah.
One of the crop circles actually was a direct illustration of that concept.
Of this concept of the change in information fields.
It was a direct illustration of a concept of information fields radiating out of the center of our galaxy and planets and suns moving through those bands. And what happens at a different scale, of course, than was shown in the crop circle. They're kind of limited paintbrush there. But in fact, as the galaxy rotates, star systems move through these information field bands, and as they move from one band into another, they change essentially into higher space-time frequencies or lower space-time frequencies, depending upon what they're moving into. But we're in the process on this planet of moving into a higher band of space-time frequency. And that produces enormous change on the planet. What looks like chaos today on the planet is actually massive change occurring, in which lower vibrational ideas become unstable and disintegrate, and higher vibrational ideas come in. And actually, the result of that process in the end will be a much higher state of order and harmony on the planet than occurred before. When you look at it in the process of change, it looks like chaos and everything, you know, going to pot, going to pieces. Mm-hmm. But that's lower vibrational ideas dissolving and higher ones coming in.
Well, this is probably the basis for astrology. I mean, in a sense that these planets and alignments create fields that affect thoughts. But, I mean, of course, you're talking about another level of something happening. But fundamentally, would you agree with that?
Geometries, so-called sacred geometries, create coherent fields which create surrounding influences. And information fields are one of the, they are the only type of fundamental physical field that has a property of non-locality. But planets, for example, are spheres. Spheres are an example of a geometry that will create a coherent information field. They will radiate from their surface an information field that's right-handed, and if you could go inside the sphere, you would find that they're creating a field that's left-handed within it. And as those any rotating body will tend to create an information field that has a property of coherence, and a spherical body will do that. And of course, what solar systems are is spherical bodies rotating around other spherical bodies. So all of those things are, in fact, creating information field influences, and they move in and out of the influence of information fields of each other and of other things within the galaxy. And the galaxy itself has an information field that radiates out of its center.
But it's also the relationship between different spheres creates angles and degrees and potentials.
Absolutely. That's right.
I love what you said. As we move into a different kind of sector of the galaxy, our field is being accelerated to have new thoughts.
The frequency is essentially rising.
It's rising, but you know what's interesting? We're able to see, or maybe we're not, these new... We can see the galaxy. We can see where the arms are. We can maybe even see where we're moving. So, I mean, just a technical question. If we can see it, we're really not at the next frequency, because in a sense, we only see things within our frequency, right?
Well, so, as you're shifting frequencies, your ability to perceive the higher frequency is increasing.
Mm-hmm. So as we shift to the higher frequency, we're perceiving more of our galaxy? Is this evident?
You're starting to perceive the effect of a different reality. That's maybe a better way to put it, I think.
But we're moving through time, space, and therefore the consciousness, which exists as a a wave pattern somewhere, is intersecting with the Earth field and the Earth consciousness in a way to create a new combination of being. Does that make sense?
That's true.
So that's fascinating for me, because in a sense, no one really knows how these new frequencies will really manifest themselves in the world.
The only thing that one could say fundamentally would be that as you move into a higher frequency band, there tends to be more harmony, tends to be more coherent.
More coherent. So in a way, your machine is sort of a forerunner of where we're moving as a planet.
In a sense, that's right. And as a matter of fact, one of the things which people sometimes experience when they're in this unit, it's by no means universal because consciousness is different for every individual and their priorities are different and their human design is different. But what is sometimes perceived by people when they're in this highly coherent field is that they can sometimes actually get their own field's vibration up high enough to where they can actually see a different reality around them temporarily. Usually the lower levels, the lower tones, if you will, of the dimensional existence above this one. And they come out, all of them describing it the same way, who perceive that. And they will tell you that they perceive it as having more light content. That is, they're still seeing objects and structures and life forms and people and all of that, but they look like they radiate more light. They have more light content. They're more radiant. And actually, if you look very closely at the world around you now, if you could monitor it very closely, you would find that there's more radiance to nature, and it's more vibrant. And I would suggest that if one had been making biophoton measurements somehow of the same thing, which is, of course, everything living is always changing, but if you could somehow have made biophoton measurements of a given tree in its same state 20, 30, 50 years ago, and you did it now, you'd find it's emitting more biophotons. It has a higher degree of light content to it.
Wow, that's fascinating. I mean, that would be an amazing discovery. So it's not just that it has light content, it's the light content effect on human consciousness and on the field of humanity that then is shifting the way we're thinking and the nature of reality.
Yeah, everything is shifting to a higher vibrational state, so to speak, which is also inherently a higher state of harmony.
So the other thing you talked about in these, there's, in a sense, there's new laws of physicality where in the old paradigm, the opposites would attract. Here, like attracts like.
That's correct. Actually, in the classical fields, magnetic fields and electric fields, for example, opposites attract and like repels. In information fields, it was discovered and proven by the Russians and others that, as you say, like attracts like and opposites repel. Well, all living things create a thought field around their physical presence, including human beings. Human beings will tend to discover, and many people are already aware of this metaphysically, that the kind of quality of vibration of ideas which they're putting in their field will attract like-minded people, and it will repel people who are not like-minded. And because information fields are unique in being the only fields that have a property of non-locality, those like-minded people will start to attract each other across space-time in what will seem to be a rather unlikely set of coincidences in many cases, which are in fact not coincidences at all. It's a product of the phenomenon that like attracts like.
Wow, so you just really put together a whole big piece there to explain what a lot of people have only witnessed, you know. They've only said, wow, that's strange, all these coincidences and all these synchronicities, and why is that happening now? I'm curious, what other byproducts of these new fields have you noticed showing up?
Well, that's a little hard to answer in that what we now have come to understand is that everything that we experience in a given level of reality, a given vibrational level, which we might call this particular dimension of existence, is the result of interaction of information fields with a light field that's pervasive. what produces information fields is human consciousness. And actually, it turns out that we're literally generating our reality in terms of the experience that we have. In every degree, we're literally generating and regenerating our reality, both individually and collectively, by virtue of the thoughts of humanity as a whole and thoughts of each of us as individuals. What information fields actually do is they affect probability. One of the things which has been discovered in leading-edge physics, quantum physics, is that matter and energy are discontinuous. They literally wink into and out of existence at a very, very high rate called Planck's angular frequency, which is like 10 to the 43rd times a second. I mean, so everything that you look at, even though it looks like it's always there, like a chair or a dog or anything else material, is in fact not there continuously. It's continuing to be reestablished and regenerated and remanifesting into existence at a very, very high rate. How it manifests into existence is influenced by, according to a probabilistic function, in which the thing which influences that probability is the information field that causes it to manifest. So you can literally change the world and do, and we all do individually and we all do collectively, the world around us that we're experiencing by virtue of our thoughts. They influence probabilities, and they influence what actually manifests around us that we call reality.
And with enough powerful thoughts, we could get in between those frames and you know, materialize ourselves on the other side of the planet. I mean, masters have done that.
With the right understanding, you can, in fact, do that. It requires a considerable knowledge and certainty. And certainty is really the thing. Actually, wishing doesn't do anything, as it turns out. But knowing does everything. And if you can get your place into yourself into a place of knowing that, in fact, you have that capacity, then you start to have the capacity to influence your own existence. And if you want to influence the collective existence, then that's a matter of how much of humanity starts to be aligned in that same certainty.
But the problem is the field of consciousness generated from the collective is very heavy to get beyond. You know, it's hard for new ideas to get out there because there's such a thick thought form from the masses.
That's true, but there is a phenomenon which some, like Rupert Sheldrake and others, have referred to as the 100th monkey syndrome, where if you get enough of humanity aligned in a given coherence of thought, then you start to literally change the world. And we see evidence of that in physics by virtue of some of the work, some of the very excellent work done by Dean Radin and others, Dean formerly when he was at Princeton and now at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, looking at the behavior of random number generators in the so-called Global Consciousness Project. And they have noticed and proven that when you get a large number of people, small percentage of the planet, but a large number of people focused on any single event, that in fact random number generators, whose whole reason for existence is that they spit out random sequences of numbers, start to become generators of sequences which have some degree of order in them. And the odds against creating those patterns of orders are huge now, as compared with what they've seen by studying things like 9/11 and looking at the, you know, the 9/11 events when a lot of people were focused on one thing, and looking at the behavior of random number generators in that region of time. But it's also true of people when they look at the Super Bowl or the ball dropping in Times Square or any event where you have a lot of people aligned, you start to see that they are affecting probability. And that's actually how they affect the entire manifestation of experience that we call reality.
Well, especially the 9/11 situation with those random number generators were very interesting, because 4 hours before anything happened, they started to have a certain coherence in that orders, as if the collective was aware of something greater about to take place.
That's exactly right, which does point out an interesting aspect of it beyond the direct aspect of people focusing on something. It points up the fact that within the consciousness of us all, there is a higher awareness, which in fact is aware of both future events and remote events, essentially telepathically. So, and you know, a lot of people like J.B. Rhine and others, the Pear Labs, former Pear Labs at Princeton, and others have looked at the whole phenomenon of premonition and been able to generate some very convincing data that in fact premonition is a reality. So, if in fact humanity as a whole has aspects of premonition, then you can see how that phenomenon that you just described can be.
Well, I think that's also part of what you've described as moving into a higher field of coherency as the solar system, the Earth, and, you know, all of this evolves. The fact that we can measure that premonition is an aspect of the fact that we are now moving into the field that will acknowledge that. And I think that's probably a major aspect of where we're going collectively.
Right.
And so your overall vision is to create these units from what and put them around the world, which will, well, they'll have relationships to each other, of course, and then create a greater coherency within the field of the collective. Is that it?
Yeah, we basically are seeking to assist in people reconnecting with their higher level of awareness, which creates more harmony in the world when they do, because they simply are more aware at a very powerful level, and they conduct themselves quite differently when they're in that awareness than when they're not.
Mm-hmm. So if we could put, I mean, how many, I mean, you're not in production yet, but at some point, how many units would you like to have out there?
As many as we have resources to put out. Actually, we don't plan to sell them or even to lease them. We plan to create them and put them out into operating arrangements which are appropriate with regard to the environment that they're going to be operated in and the people that are going to operate in them. We're a charitable activity. We rely currently on donations to be able to do that. Eventually, we may have other sources of resources, but you know, it's all a resource question, basically, as to how many of these things get out in the world. But I really think that the effect of this will be world-changing in time, and the more of them we get out there, the more favorable impact we'll make on changing the world.
And the foundation is the lightfieldfoundation.org. Is that your foundation?
That's our website, yes. It is the Lightfield Foundation is the organization, and our website, as you say, is lightfieldfoundation.org.
And people can make a donation right there on the website.
I should know the answer to that, but at least they have the ability to contact us through that.
I mean, there's so much more to talk about. I mean, the metaphysics of being. I mean, you gave a great presentation recently that was very inspiring. But, I mean, this is sort of just an initial conversation, and I hope to do more, and maybe a television interview. But what would you really want people to know about your work and this new paradigm?
Well, fundamentally, what I want them to know is the absolutely amazing and fantastic capacities that they have within themselves. And the reason why we created the Lightfield Unit was as a means of re-empowerment, of basically assisting people with reconnecting with their highest level of awareness, because when they do that, they start to manifest all kinds of amazing abilities and more harmony in their lives. They have the capacities within themselves to heal themselves of virtually anything, the light field unit isn't a healing device or unit or whatever. But they themselves, if they can connect with their highest level of awareness, they start manifesting a level of harmony within themselves that's higher. And additionally, they start spontaneously, when they're in that mode, spontaneously knowing things that no one taught us, which is, in fact, why the light field exists. Nobody taught us how to build the light field. We downloaded it, basically, by connecting with our highest level of consciousness. And everyone has these kinds of capacities within them, far more capacities than people dream.
I mean, but while we're waiting for the light field to be distributed around the planet, how do you suggest we tap into these capacities?
Well, there are lots of ways to do that, but the most common way that people are using to do that is simply meditation, trying to quiet down the racket around them so that they become aware of what's going on with their higher levels of consciousness and reconnect with it. And as meditators will tell you, as you know very well, you know, the more you practice that, the better you get at it. The more of it that you do in a group, the better you get at it. What's happening when you collect a group to meditate is they're creating a coherent information field. Their fields start to join because they're all starting to do the same thing with the same purpose. Their fields become coherent, becomes easier to meditate in a group, and the larger the group, the easier it is to meditate. We also know that information fields charge space-time. The Russians discovered that. If you meditate in the same place over and over, it gets easier and easier to do. If you keep moving around, it isn't as easy to do. So, you know, there are those kind of techniques that can be used to reconnect with your higher self. Being out in nature, actually, nature has still, on this planet, a fair degree of coherence. And if you're out in the woods or at the beach or, you know, by a lake or on a mountain or things like that, it's also easier to connect with your higher self. And these are really habits that become easier over time.
No, I appreciate all your research. It seems like, you know, we have to wrap it up, but it feels like we're just getting started into a whole level of depth and awareness that I think people can benefit from. But you'll come back again on the show.
I'd love to, sure.
Yeah. Okay, and your website again is lightfieldfoundation.org, right?
That's correct. Actually, .com will get you there too, either .org or .com.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Lightfieldfoundation.org or lightfieldfoundation.com will get you there.
I really appreciate your creativity, your inventiveness, and your, you know, just your ability to serve. It's very noble and honorable. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan, for the opportunity to chat, and I enjoyed it greatly.
Oh, and we'll have more conversations as well. This is Alan Steinfeld. I've been talking to Mark Newkirk, creator of the Light Field, lightfieldfoundation.com or .org. And if you want to reach me, you could check my website, newrealities.com, where this conversation will be archived, also on bbsradio.com. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening.